You're listening to the Local News Hour. I'm Roger Goldman. Well, let's see what we got in store for our weather this Miner's Day weekend. Here with the report is Cedric Haynes with the ABC 4 Weather Center.
Happy Friday, KPCW listeners. We're looking at mostly sunny skies for the Wasatch back as we go throughout your Friday. Temperatures will be climbing into the mid-70s for highs in the Park City area. We'll see those highs climbing into the low 80s in the Heber Valley. As we make our way into the weekend, it's a holiday weekend, so your Saturday, definitely your pick day of the holiday weekend. We'll be looking at high temperatures back in the mid-70s in Park City. Highs will be in the low 80s in the Heber Valley. As we make our way into Sunday, we'll start to track some significant changes as we start to draw up some tropical moisture out of the south and west, and that is going to bring us a pretty good chance of scattered showers and thunderstorms as we go into your Sunday, especially by Sunday afternoon into Sunday evening. Temperatures will climb into the low 70s in Park City for us on our Sunday. We'll see those high temperatures climbing to around 80 degrees in the Heber Valley. As we make our way into early next week, your Labor Day on Monday, showers and thunderstorms likely across the Wasatch Back as we go throughout the day. Temperatures slightly cooler. We'll struggle to get out of the 60s in Park City on your Monday with those showers and thunderstorms scattered around the area. The Heber Valley, we'll see those temperatures only in the mid-70s for highs with a good chance of scattered showers and storms. The best chance will come during the first half of your day on Monday, maybe some drier conditions by the second half of the afternoon. We'll at least keep our fingers crossed for that potential. Otherwise, as we head into the rest of next week, your Tuesday will feature partly sunny skies, temperatures in the low 70s for highs in Park City, upper 70s for the Heber Valley. And by Wednesday, we'll call it partly cloudy skies, just a pop-up storm possible, highs in the mid to upper 70s in Park City, low 80s return for the Heber Valley. And as we get into the middle of next week, we'll call it partly cloudy skies with isolated showers and thunderstorms in the forecast. Highs will be in the mid-70s in Park City. We'll see those high temperatures in the low 80s in the Heber Valley. That's the latest on your forecast for the Wasatch Back. I'm ABC 4 meteorologist Cedric Haynes.
Coming up, I'm going to get to play an unusual interview we recorded yesterday with Asia Mills and all of the Swiss Miss Girls from this weekend's Swiss Day celebration in Midway. Then Molly Miller is going to stop by to talk about last night's Park City Council meeting, and we'll finish our hour by speaking with Travis Wilcox from the Heber Valley 9/11 Day of Service Planning Commission. In a split vote, the Summit County Council approved a new ordinance changing its rezoning process. KPCW's Christine Weller reports the ordinance is meant to reduce government bureaucracy, but opponents worry it makes rezoning too easy.
Summit County Council members approved Ordinance 1016 in a split 3-2 vote Wednesday. The ordinance requires less detail from developers up front when they're asking to change what's allowed on unincorporated Snyderville Basin land. The new process would still require the county and a landowner to agree on building heights, density, layouts, and other aspects of a project. Community Development Director Peter Barnes said before, a rezone required substantial engineering drawings and documentation, resulting in wasted time, effort, and money.
It should reduce government bureaucracy. It will reduce the number of times that staff are required to review abortive work.
Barnes also said the ordinance will make the process more transparent. He said the changes will likely mean more rezone applications, but decisions will be made sooner, including negative recommendations.
In setting the expectation with the applicant, setting the expectation with the public and with the bodies that review the project, I think that's transparency in and of itself.
The ordinance became controversial last month as community members and council members raised concerns that rezoning would become too easy. Council Vice Chair Roger Armstrong worried the change would remove opportunities for public comment.
Zoning is and should be one of the hardest things we do. It is the vision of what this community should look like based on the people that elect us to be here, based on the number of interviews that we do, the public input that we get to create the zones that we create.
Armstrong and Council Chair Candace Hart voted against the ordinance. Councilmember Megan McKenna, however, liked that the changes are backed by the Snyderville Basin Planning Commission and that it will help them bring rezones to the public sooner. The ordinance proposal was spurred in part by Summit County's efforts to negotiate a partnership with Columbus Pacific Development on the county-owned Klein Dolly property in Jeremy Ranch. The proposal went back and forth for 4 years before the Planning Commission gave the thumbs up in July. Council members finally approved a rezone for the project Wednesday from rural residential to community commercial. The Crossroads at Silver Creek project includes 90 housing units with a park and clubhouse, a 4,000-square-foot nonprofit building, and 32,000 square feet of commercial space. Summit County is a financial supporter of KPCW. Christine Weller, KPCW News.
Today we are joined by Travis Wilcox to talk about the Day of Service in Heber. Morning, Travis. Thanks for joining me.
Hey, thank you, Roger. I appreciate you having me on today.
So, Travis, let's start with some background. What is the Heber Valley 9/11 National Day of Service Planning Commission, and who makes up that commission?
Yeah, well, we're a group of 10 volunteers right now across the Heber Valley. We've got actually both a former and a current member of the Heber City Council on our committee, and other business leaders, faith leaders, humanitarian groups. We've come together to do this. And really what we do is our work is to plan this event. We work to get the logistics together. We're partnering with the cities here in the valley. We're lining up the organizations to host projects. We recruit the volunteers, putting together an opening ceremony. And really the goal behind all of this is to bring this community together on a day of remembrance, and really to reach out to each other, build bridges, and be reminded of what we can do when we serve one another.
Travis, how long has there been a Heber Day of Service? How many years have you guys been doing this?
We've been doing this probably 12 plus years now.
Mm-hmm. And about how many projects do you expect to be able to put on this year?
We have we've got 17 projects lined up right now, and that doesn't include a lot of projects that I know are happening just neighborhood to neighborhood that we haven't listed officially on our site. But we've got all sorts of projects. We wanted to put together a wide variety of projects that people of all abilities could participate in. I can just give you a few examples.
Please.
We've got a lot of cleanup projects, cleanup to parks. The city has arranged quite a number of tree planting projects. The volunteers will actually be taught how to plant the trees, and the holes will be dug. The people will help plant those trees and then, you know, fill and mulch and that sort of thing. We've partnered with the Wasatch County Sheriff's Office. We're going to be posting some suicide prevention signs at trailheads. We're going to be doing some graffiti removal. There's one that's kind of close to the hearts of people with, we're going to be weaving some sleeping mats out of plastic grocery bags for people experiencing homelessness. And there's an ongoing effort to gather those bags. We've got one lined up for the youth of the valley that they're going to go up to Cascade Springs and be doing some cleanup there of vegetation and different things. And in fact, it was really fun. We've got a new high school, brand new high school in the valley, Deer Creek High. And I had they've already established a service club, a Just Serve service club there. The president of that club reached out to me last night and said, "Hey, I've got 30 kids here that we want to be involved. How can we help?" And so there's lots of community support.
Well, you got 30 young kids. I bet they can do some of the heavier lifting projects that you've got lined up.
Yeah.
And if someone's listening to this and they get curious, is there a website where they can see all of the projects?
Yeah, we've used justserve.org is our platform where we list our projects and recruit our volunteers. And so you can just go to justserve.org. You can search for Heber City, put in the Heber City, Utah, or the zip code, and it'll just bring up all of the projects that we have listed, and people can volunteer from there. People can also come the day of our service day, which is September 12th. Just want to throw that out there, September 12th at 9 a.m. We're going to be at Main Street Park, and they can get a list of projects there as well.
And are you looking at, do you have a sense of whether there will be more projects this year than in previous year, or about the same?
Yeah, we'll probably almost double the number of projects that we have from last year. I mean, I think when it's all said and done, we'll have probably around 25 to 30 projects going on around the valley. on September 12th. Last year, we had around 13. So quite a big jump in projects.
So that's a lot of enthusiasm. Again, are you seeing on the other side, how are your signups going? Are you seeing many of the projects getting filled?
Yeah, we expect about 500 volunteers this year. We had probably 350 to 400 last year, and we will exceed that this year for sure.
Okay, and let's talk about the 12th. Tell us, can you run through the program for the day on the 12th?
Yes. On that day, we're going to start with a light breakfast. We're so grateful for the generosity of local businesses and the Wasatch Community Foundation. They've donated food and beverages, so we'll be serving a light breakfast for volunteers to grab and take with them or you know, eat while they're heading out to their projects. We'll be starting at 9 a.m., like I said, at Main Street Park. We're going to have an opening ceremony. We're going to have the high school band performing some patriotic music. We'll have a flag ceremony, the national anthem. We'll have a prayer and a moment of silence. And then we're actually doing something special this year. As part of this, we're going to be presenting Heber City with a Just Serve City designation for their ongoing efforts for volunteerism, and that should be a fun thing to do. And then we're going to have a speaker that will be sharing some 9/11 reflection and a brief message. All of this, I think, will just be a great start to a wonderful day. Volunteers should be off to their projects by about 9:30, and the projects will go until about noon.
Anything special to commemorate either the fact that this is the 25th or the fact that it's America's 250th? Any special elements of the program?
You know, really the whole day is designed to bring those two anniversaries together, the 25th mm-hmm. anniversary of September 11th and America 250. We think the best way to mark America's milestone is exactly.
Travis, you still there? Okay.
Sorry.
Did you mute yourself? Okay. You were saying the best way to mark the milestone. Go ahead.
Yeah, the best way to mark the milestone is exactly how we built this country, and that's neighbor helping neighbor. And so, you know, as part of that, we wanted to do this city designation of, you know, this Just Serve City, and then also our speakers will be kind of geared toward all of that.
You know, Travis, I'm going to be presumptuous and assume that you are old enough to remember 9/11. And again, what's special to you about that day? I'm sure you remember where you were. I know I remember sitting in my office in Washington, D.C., across from the FBI building and thinking, I better get out of here. Tell me about your own personal recollections.
Yeah, I was driving to work that day when listening to the radio, actually, and, you know, heard this all start to happen. Unbelievable. Got to the office. Everybody just paused, and we, you know, turned on a TV, and we were just glued to all of what was happening. Unbelievable experience. I think everybody remembers that. But the thing I think that I remember the most is the unity that came out of it for mm-hmm. our country. We came together. We were united, and I think that spirit continues today. I think that's what this National Day of Service is all about, is trying to unify us, bring us together, build bridges, and understand that, you know, we're all humans, and even though we may have some differences, we can come together and be friends.
Once again, can you remind our listeners of the Just Serve website if they're interested in signing up or learning more about the event?
Yeah, please go to justserve.org and search for Heber City, Utah. It'll list all of our projects, and we actually have an organization page there that has additional information that's easy to find. Again, join us Saturday, September 12th, 9 a.m., Heber City, Main Street Park. We would love to have any and all come and be with us.
Travis, thanks for spending time with us. Anything else you want to add just before we go?
I just appreciate the opportunity to come on and look forward to being together with our community on that day.
Travis, thanks for spending time with us. Locals applauded as the Wasatch County Council passed a resolution urging the state to repeal the preliminary municipality program. Grace Dorfler has an update on the county's response to the developer-led towns.
Wasatch County leaders say Utah's preliminary municipality program is fundamentally flawed. That's the 2024 state law that allows landowners to create towns in undeveloped areas. After an argument with the governor's office over the county's stance on the law, the council formally asked state lawmakers Wednesday to abandon the program. They did so with the backing of about 30 residents who attended the meeting and more than 300 others who signed a letter of support circulated by Wallsburg resident Carly Givens.
You have heard a lot the last few weeks about what the state wants. Tonight, we want you to hear what our own residents want. We hope you continue to move forward with Resolution 2611 and sending this message to the legislature.
Patty Sprant spoke on behalf of the Wasatch County GOP.
We are proud of you and proud of the stand that you've taken.
Along with the resolution, the county is sending state lawmakers a report detailing what it sees as the program's problems. Those include worries about oversight of the towns, the approval process, infrastructure, and affordable housing. To read the report, visit kbcw.org. Councilmember Eric Rowland called for a vote.
All right, we have a motion by Kendall.
We have second.
Second by Spencer. Any further discussion before the vote? Okay, we'll go ahead and start with Mark.
Yes.
Mike?
Yes.
Colleen?
Yes.
Myself, yes.
Yes.
Kendall, Luke?
Yes.
And Spencer?
Yes.
Okay, that passes unanimously. Thank you.
In addition to the resolution, Rowland says the county will continue its outreach to other counties.
It sends, I think, a powerful message to those who need to hear that message, and that's the legislature. They need to understand that we are serious, we're united, and there needs to be meaningful change.
For 2026, Wasatch County saw three applications for preliminary municipalities. Morgan County Representative Tiara Oxier and Wasatch County Representative Mike Kohler have tried unsuccessfully to reform the program in the past two legislative sessions. Grace Dorfler, KPCW News.
Well, for many people, it's the best holiday of the year. Park City's 130th Miners' Day celebration gets underway bright and early on September 7th. The annual tradition honors Park City's mining heritage with a parade, family activities, competitions, and the largest fundraiser of the year for the Park City Rotary Club. KPCW's Leslie Thatcher has more.
Park City Miners' Day, celebrated on Labor Day, will feature a variety of activities and events for all ages. Miners' Day Events Chair and Rotarian Kristen Wright says the day starts with breakfast in City Park, hosted by St. Mary's Catholic Church from 7:30 to 9:30. At 8 a.m., the Twilight Rotary Club will host the Park City 5K with proceeds benefiting their club and local animal organizations. There's no registration fee, but donations are accepted. At 10:30, Running with the Balls returns to Main Street. About 15,000 golf balls will be released from a ramp and raced down a three-block track. The first balls to reach the landing chutes win prizes, including a Deer Valley Season's Pass, skis, and golf, restaurant, and spa certificates.
This year alone, Park City Rotary has given $150,000 back to the community. And our primary fundraiser is the Running of the Balls. In the past, we have cleared 100,000. And of course, we always hope to build on what we've done previously. Unfortunately, rain, you know, that hinders our ball sales, but you know what? We will be out there with a smile. And I hope folks will buy. And also, you can always buy online right now.
Depending on the weather, fighter jets from Hills Air Force Base will make a flyover of Main Street. The Miners' Day Parade, featuring about 40 entries, is scheduled to begin after 11. Following the parade, everyone's invited to City Park for food, drinks, live music, and children's games. Live music runs from noon to 4 p.m. and includes the Brazuca Band, performing a mix of reggae, rock, and funk, followed by Memphis-rooted Soul's Blue artist Tony Holiday. At 12:30, a bit of Park City's past will be recreated with the mucking and drilling competition. The drilling competition requires contestants to lift a heavy drill and bore a dynamite-sized hole into an 8-ton rock. In the mucking competition, miners use a small bulldozer to scoop up the mining debris and dump it into an ore cart to be hauled away. History presentations will also be held during an open house at Miners Hospital from noon to 4. The Friends of the Park City Library will host a used book sale on Sunday and Monday from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. on the third floor of the Park City Library. Friends board member Rachel Solomon says even though the organization hosted a sale in July, the Kimball Junction Library isn't accepting donations ahead of its move to a new location. As a result, those books have been brought to the Park City Library for the sale. Friends members will get an early shopping opportunity Sunday morning from 8 to 10. Membership fees to enter start at $25.
And then the general public can come in at 10. And then we will again on the final day on Monday, September 7th, have the tote bag happy hours, which is from 2 to 4. And that's for folks to fill a tote bag for $15, which we provide, and then they can fill it with as many books as they can fit. And they are large tote bags, so they fit a lot of books.
Money raised during the book sale pays for non-budgeted library needs, including staff professional development, the One Book, One Community annual event, and a memory station that will soon be installed at the library. The station will allow patrons to digitize memories and family history documents and recordings. For the complete schedule of Miner's Day and to purchase balls, you can see the link online at kpcw.org. Leslie Thatcher, KPCW News.
Well, the Park City Council had its regular meeting last night. Here with the debrief, we have Councilmember Molly Miller. Good morning, Molly.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for coming in. Let's start with water. Kind of a soggy topic. The Park City Council heard from Raftellus yesterday about how that finance firm is going to conduct a water rate study. Can you help us understand why the council is looking into this?
So it's considered best practice to do a water rate study every 5 to 7 years, and that's for a couple of reasons. It makes sure that the revenue that we are collecting covers operations and maintenance and improvements, and it also ensures that rates are fair and equitable across all user segments. So we want to ensure that we're being fiscally responsible.
And how does the water rate vary within households? Do larger households pay more per gallon, or is that just for the hookup fee?
Oh, that's such a good question, and it is.
Because it's complicated.
It is complicated, and it's as complicated as like your lot size, the width of the pipe that delivers your water, whether the water has to go uphill or downhill, and it is. We have been trying to simplify it. It's impossible to simplify it, so we really have to rely upon these experts to make sure and double check and check our work again to make sure that we are doing the best possible rate that we can.
So what exactly are these people going to do, the study people? How are they going to figure this out?
So they gave us 5 tasks that they're going to accomplish, and it was everything from meeting with council a few times to define success and learn about our objectives, to reviewing what our revenue requirements are. How much do we need to earn to make sure we're covering the costs? The cost of service analysis. We want to make sure that we are providing the best service possible to our customers, our clients. Task 4, they said, is the design and structure of the rates, like based on those pipe widths and all of the delivery impediments that they have to accommodate for. And task 5, my favorite as a communications person, is the public information and community outreach. So really making an effort to get out ahead and let people know what we're doing and why we're doing it, and that we are trying to do the best we can in a way that's fair for all users.
Along those lines, I know that a probably large consumer of water here in Park City is probably the golf course. And yes. In the past, there has been some controversy about what they pay. Where does that stand, and will the study look at that?
Oh, certainly. All the users of water, absolutely, will be reviewed, and it will all be part of that community outreach and public information campaign.
Okay. Do you have any sense of what the study's going to cost?
You know, Ed would say probably $160,000. He has a thing that every consultant fee comes in at around $160,000, and it's a little shocking.
That's an Edism, okay.
It's a little shocking. I need to review that. I know we went over that prior to this. I can find out for you.
Okay. Anything else to touch on water?
No, that's it. I know that it's a precious, precious resource, and we want to be sure we're being very respectful of it.
I want to talk for a little while. There was not that much else on the agenda last night.
Right.
So I want to talk a little bit in sort of broad terms about affordable housing. I know you're going to be taking it up. It's coming up as an agenda item for a work session in a couple of weeks, as I understand. Is
yes,
that right?
That's okay. Right. Yes.
And let's start with some broad concepts. I want to hear your philosophy. Let's start with the biggest of the big picture. Why is affordable housing important to this community?
It is important to this community, and I love this question because I think what's missing in all of this affordable housing discussion is the why. Why is it important to us? It's important, obviously, to every community. Every community seems to be struggling with it. No one has gotten it dialed in quite yet. As soon as they do, I'll be taking notes. But certainly for us specifically, when we don't have a certain percentage of our workforce that is able to live in town, our services suffer. Our lift lines get longer. We wait for hours in restaurants for our meals because staff can't be hired to work in the kitchen or to wait tables. Businesses close down on Main Street. Or if businesses are able to stay open, maybe it's just a few days a week, they also will have to pay higher wages to entice workers to drive all the way past, say, East Village. The about 2,000 workers or so that we have coming from the Heber area, I'm not sure that I would drive past East Village to get all the way into town to come work at a resort in Park City proper. I think that we would have to, and then of course, when those local businesses have to raise their wages exponentially, we pay those increased costs, of course, because it's unsustainable for local businesses. And 15% is really a minimum compared to most mountain towns. Granted, geographically, we're in a very unique situation. We are always going to be a commuter destination, commuter work destination, even with just 15% in town, because everybody else will have to drive in.
And what's the numerator and the denominator of the 15%? 15% of what?
15% of our workforce.
Whose goal is that? Is that just
a
community?
So that was determined by the 2025 council. And that goal is, they set the deadline for that goal to be 2032. So the 15% goal translates into, let me pull it up here, 1,864 total units, 1,864 units, and that is to house around 12,000 employees.
Have any sense of where you are now and where we are now?
Yes,
in terms of the,
I can tell you. We are at, including, so affordable units in operation right now, mm-hmm. 829. Units under construction would bring us up to, including Studio Crossing and a couple of other smaller projects, about 1,000 units in progress, including those in total. So still unfunded and entitled is the HOPA project, which right. They have not been funded, so they're kind of back to the drawing board. And I'm so excited and so hopeful that they can figure something else out, because even with all of our projects that we have going and want to have going, we still need that HOPA project.
Just so I understand, there have to be a HOPA number for the existing residents in there, right?
Exactly.
So that number's not,
exactly.
even if they get it refinanced, we're going to come back
exactly.
to that in a second.
Exactly.
It's not going to be like it's all new units, because
right.
it's not.
I think it's going to double the amount of units that they
right.
have. Exactly.
Right.
So okay. that gives us another 100.
Yeah.
And then we would still need, even with 5-acre site and Clark Ranch, which are proposed, we would still need, after all of those come online and come to fruition, 416 units just to have the occupancy. We're not trying to house everybody, not by any stretch of the imagination, just 15% of the workforce.
So let's talk a little bit about what you see, again, philosophically, as the role of local government and the federal government, you know, differentiate between the two of them in sort of the facilitation of affordable housing.
You know, I think when it starts to impact our community's quality of life, it's certainly a responsibility of our municipality to step in and try to help that friction, ease that friction a little bit. And again, you know, there are challenges, whether it's for rent housing, for purchase housing, attainable, affordable, super affordable, for the missing middle. It is so complex, and it is such a work in progress. And we might not get it right. I hope we do. But gosh, we are still trying to get it right with the first iteration of affordable housing in our community. And when things go sideways, we're trying to learn from that and learn how to set the next community, next little neighborhood up for success. So what are the things that we have learned from that we can put into place or recommend as somebody who has been through this process? A newer piece of this puzzle is the P3, so the public-private partnership, rather. So that has added another whole layer of complexity, and you hear from people so much. So what's the financial deal? Why aren't you being transparent? And that is something that is happening. We're working through that right now. We're trying to ensure that we have the very best deal possible. And that includes getting information, getting feedback from experts to make sure that we are all well aligned on what is best for the community. And even though, for example, the 5 acre is not using local taxpayer money, it's TRT, the transient room tax. We're not treating that like, oh, it's visitor money, so it doesn't matter. We are still making sure that we are being so responsible and so thoughtful and optimizing those dollars for the best community benefit.
In a sense, you can't really say that because of the original land purchase.
Right.
So, I mean, that was local taxpayer money, right?
That was TRT money.
That was already TRT money.
Yes, sir. That's why they started the fund. Mm-hmm. At that time, they had an agreement with local resorts and businesses. They said, oh, we're going to purchase this parcel. It's going to be something that, you know, what's good for the community is going to be good for tourism, and it's going to be this vibrant center. And so that was the compact that was made with businesses to purchase and then fund the project, our contribution.
So the TRT money could only be tapped by the city for certain kinds of
things.
And this was one of them.
That's correct.
And so, again, philosophically, what I hear you saying is government's role is to try to facilitate and promote a vibrant community, and therefore, in some circumstances, acting with, as you say, prudence, finding ways for government to get involved in this, in your view, is appropriate.
Absolutely. If we weren't to get involved in this, we would see things like what happened in Vail and Aspen. They had reduced operating schedules, they had capacity caps, restaurants and bakeries and stores, they had to reduce seating, they cut shifts, they closed 2 to 3 days a week, they were not able to hire retail workers and kitchen staff. They also, the ski areas had major bottlenecks. In Vail, I went on city tour with a leadership class. I know that we took a bus. We rode for 8 hours on the bus, which was a blast.
Got to know a lot of people.
Got to know my wonderful leadership class, and I know that they are about to announce the next leadership class. I can't wait to see who's in it. At any rate, we heard anecdotally in Vail that they were in such a crunch. Obviously, they're geographically very different from Park City. They were in such a crunch for housing that the community kind of had a bit of an uprising. They were like, turn this open space into housing. We cannot survive. And so certainly in my view, I don't want that to happen in Park City. I don't want traffic to get worse. When people live here, they don't have to get here during peak hours. And I don't want it to be painful for people, to say nothing of the basic modicum of humanity of trying to care for our fellow man and make sure that we have a safe place to live that's as close to work as possible. That's not even the point here. It's a little colder than that. It's like, hey, let's just make sure that we don't have to wait in a long lift line.
So as we're talking about, you mentioned Aspen, and one of the interests, and the Aspen sort of brings up the issue of rental versus purchased housing. Because one of the things Aspen did, as I understand it, 20 years ago, was they created this large pool of housing where people could purchase it. And at that time, the working people of Aspen were there. Many of them are still there, but they're now retired.
Right.
And so you've got this people of that are aging in place. Now, you can't throw them out.
Right.
First of all, they own the place, but
right.
also... That goes to me as one of the really interesting issues about the two models. Talk to me about your perspective. And we've also had issues here in Park City
yes.
of purchased affordable housing where the HOA costs over time go up
yes.
and make it much less affordable. So tell me about
right.
your personal perspective on rental versus purchase as we go forward.
So I think the spirit of affordable housing is more easily attained with rental at this point. The goal is to be able to create a model for purchase that actually works, because the whole idea is this is your first home or this is your first home in Park City, and then you can level up. And obviously, when you get an affordable house or a house that you can afford and it only appreciates a certain limited amount, 3%, to make sure that it stays in that affordable housing pool, if you're selling it, you can't afford to buy into the next level here. And that is something that we have looked at charts and graphs and modeling and projections, and it's like, okay, what do we do? In Breckenridge, they spend $5 million every single year on affordable housing. So they have their local workforce. They can pick a house in a matter that is, you know, that would be feasible. And they deed restrict the house, and they provide down payment assistance. And if there's something that comes up on the house, if you haven't gotten down payment assistance, if, say, you need a new roof and you weren't expecting it, they will help out with that to make sure that homeowners can stay in their houses. They invest millions every year. I don't think that model would fly here, but we are trying to find out the best way to achieve. We want people to own houses. We want people to enter into that ability to move up. We just haven't figured out how to do it.
You mentioned traffic mitigation.
Yes, sir.
It's funny. This morning I ran into a young man who's living in Engine House. And he said to me, it's amazing, he said. I think he talked last night at the city council meeting. He says, it's amazing to me. I look at the parking garage at Engine House in the middle of the day and it's full. The cars are all there, so people are not driving to work. As we are hearing the ongoing sort of controversy about Bonanza, about the 5-acre site, talk to me about your perspective about the relationship between affordable housing and traffic. There's a lot of arguments about it's going to increase. I hear that as a counterargument that people will use public transportation. Where do you come out on this?
So traffic needs all the brains possible to fix. Consistently, it's the top complaint. Second is affordable housing. And so there's a couple of layers here. And the first is when you have people living in town, they don't have to get to town. But then they still have to get around town. So it will add traffic in that sense. However, part of the city's efforts encapsulates a huge holistic traffic mitigation plan, including park and ride at Gordo, utilizing Richardson Flat park and ride, the dedicated bus lane, integrating with the BRT, making sure that there's a mini transit hub at the 5-acre to make it as enticing and attractive as possible, connecting all those trails to the different neighborhoods. It's limited in connectivity right now. And so there are many things in place, and we're still looking for ways to continue to mitigate. Let's also keep in mind that Recycle Utah is moving. That's going to cut hundreds of car trips per day in that area. There, we are still working on it. It is important. It is an issue. We are going to try to fix it. If you have thoughts, email me.
Monty, we've got about a little less than a minute left. I want to ask you about Miner's Day.
Okay.
Are you going to come to Miner's Day? What's your perspective on it as a celebration?
Miner's Day is a day that can only happen in Park City, Utah. It is singular. We'll be there. The parade is the best. It's less of a scene than the 4th of July, and I think that always makes it a lot more fun. It's much more local. I love it. Running of the balls, I think everybody should buy the ball. And we'll see you. Kids games, city park, mucking and drilling competition. Everything kicks off tomorrow morning.
Monday morning,
7:30 a.m. in city park, and continues. The fun continues on Main Street.
Molly Miller, thanks for spending time with us. Miner's Day is not the only special event coming up this weekend in the area. Midway celebrates Swiss Days from Friday, September 4th today, and tomorrow, September 5th. With us to tell us about the event, we have Asia Mills, advertising and PR for Swiss Days, and we have all of the Swiss Miss finalists who will be talking to us and singing to us later in the interview. Good morning, guys, and thanks for joining me.
Morning.
Good morning.
Morning.
Good morning.
Okay, Asia, let's start with you. Let's talk a little bit about Swiss Days before we get a chance to talk to our Swiss Miss.
Okay.
Asia, do you have a sense of how long the event Swiss Days has been celebrated?
Yeah, so this is our 79th year of Swiss Days, which...
And neither of us were here for the first one.
Well, I sure wasn't. No, we were not. But it started originally as a farmer's market called Harvest Days, and then local farmers would just trade their goods, things like that, and then it's now evolved into one of the largest craft fairs in America,
and
actually.
And it's a celebration of the history of Midway, I take
Correct,
it.
Yes. We were settled by the Swiss, and so therefore that's why everything's kind of catered around the whole Swiss heritage.
And of course, when you drive through Midway, that Swiss heritage is evident. I mean, you can see it in the buildings.
Correct.
And it's really, really fun, the celebration that you do this weekend. Let's talk a little bit about some of the events that are going to go on this weekend.
So it is 2 days. It's both Friday and Saturday of Labor Day weekend every year. And there's so much going on. The event runs from 8 to 8 both days. We have things. We've got two entertainment stages, actually, an indoor and an outdoor stage that run all day. We have got a parade. We have a 10K. We've got a barbecue dinner, barbecue beef dinner that they've actually already started barbecuing. Actually, it's kind of cool the way they smoke it out on the square. Actually, it's really cool. There's a breakfast. There's, did I say parade? Maybe I'm repeating myself.
That's okay.
Let's parade, entertainment, food, tons of shops.
And let's start with the artisan market, because I think that's one of the core activities.
Yes.
Tell us about that. How many, roughly how many participants and what kind of crafts would we see there?
Right. So something that makes Swiss Days really unique is that we've really tried to keep everything handmade, homemade type goods. So even like jewelry needs to be made. Nothing can really kind of be shipped in. It's kind of, that's what's really unique about it. So it's really cool to walk through the booths and see things. We've had things like stone furniture before from a gentleman in Colorado, which is really cool. So that's a little thing that's kind of separate from other vendors, is you're not just going to go find things that you can find online. It's really centered to that. We usually have anywhere from 160 to 770 vendors, just depending on the year and the space. We jury them out every year at the beginning of the year. We get about 300 applicants from all across the nation. So that's something that's cool, is that, yes, they are, a lot of them are local to, you know, Midway, Heber, Utah in general, but there are also that come from, you know, New Jersey, California, Arizona. So that we really do, you know, get a huge variety of everything from home goods, you know, apparel, wrapping paper, jewelry. I mean, really, you name it, and it's probably going to be there.
And so there's a competition, which is juried, but also most of these are for sale, I assume.
Well, so when I say that they were juried in, so they send in an application, and then the committee all goes through those applications just to make sure that it is all actually things that we need, and that we don't have, you know, 20 of the same booths. We really try to keep everything different.
Now, many people think of fairs and carnivals like this as featuring a large variety of fried food, but I understand this is more Swiss-oriented. Tell us about some of the foods.
So we kind of make things Swiss food. So, for instance, you've heard of the Navajo taco, but when you come to Swiss Days, it's a Swiss taco.
Okay.
So things like that. We have scones. They have hamburgers and hot dogs. They have fruit. They have knackwurst sandwiches. So they kind of have everything like that. They have cheese curds from the local dairy over there, the Heber Valley Dairy. So there are a lot of tons of different booths with food, ice cream, snacks, drinks, everything you can imagine. But we always just throw that little Swiss twist on there.
So you could come, you can get the food, you can go look at the various crafts. And you also mentioned music. There are a couple of entertainment venues. Talk a little bit about those lineups.
Right. Okay. So we do have a stage outdoor that runs, you know, all day long as well. I believe they cycle them out in about 30 to 45 minute time frames. And then we have an indoor stage. So it's nice to, if people need to kind of get out of the heat, get out of the sun, they can go inside and sit down. And we have entertainment in there as well. We have like our Swiss Bells are performing, which are, you know, pretty popular to Midway. We have really cool artists that come, singers, performers. They are like the Alpenhorn. So like those big, huge, long, like the Ricola ones.
Right, the ones, those on the ones.
Yeah, those ones. Yeah, so things like that, which is really cool. It's not just every, like, entertainment. It's like a lot of it is very cool. A lot of like German singers. We've got yodelers, master yodeler. He's performed in like Disney World and all across, I think, the world, if I'm correct. So things like that, which are really fun. Some fun bands. But yeah, we do have a lot of kind of that European vibe, Swiss vibe of performers as well.
And Swiss Miss Girls that we're going to be speaking to later, will
correct.
They perform at some
yes,
point as well?
Yes, they do. Yep, they perform both indoor and outdoor both days. And then they are also in our parade. They are there to walk around and greet people and take photos. They have a cute little booth that they set up that you can go visit, kind of get to see them. They're just adorable.
And they're here in the studio.
Yes.
Before we start asking questions, then let me just ask, can you share a little bit about the Swiss Miss competition? How did it work? How did these people get here?
Me?
Yes, ma'am.
So they call it a Swiss Miss program. And what it is in, I believe it's like March, but in the spring of every year, anybody that lives in the Midway Valley that is 9 to 12 years old is allowed to try out for a spot to be a Swiss Miss. And they do things like they do a talent, they do a private interview, they do like a question on stage. and they also do some poise, things like that. And yeah, and then they're juried, or excuse me, I keep saying that, but they are judged by people that are out of the county, which is nice. There's really no bias on that, and they just have to bring their best. And every year, it's just a huge group of girls that try out, and it's so much fun. And then at the very end, they get to go. And then they, thing that's really nice about Swiss Miss, when I was on Boosters, I used to be in charge of Swiss Miss. And what I really like about it is that it's really service-oriented, very community service-based. So service projects, beautification in Midway, things like that. So it's very much opposite of like a pageant. It's mm-hmm. very much more focused on that, which I think is really good for girls this age to learn.
And those girls are all here in the studio with us. I want to talk to each of them. Good morning. Can you tell me your name and what you did to qualify for this contest, for the pageant?
Okay. You just want to start over here?
My name is Millie Iverson, and for my talent, I did Do You Want to Build a Snowman, and I sang and danced.
Okay. And what is your name?
My name is Kaylee Kohler, and what I did for my talent was a yodeling song.
Okay, can we just hear a little bit of what that yodeling might have sounded like?
Sure.
That sounds like yodeling to me. Thank you very much. Can you tell me your name?
My name's Olive Mortensen, and I performed a ballet variation. I performed the variation La Esmeralda.
Okay. And tell me your name and what you did for your talent.
My name is Lila Charlesworth, and I performed and sang Journey to the Past from Anastasia.
Okay. Sounds like a lot of good songs. And who did I miss? Did I miss you? I'm so sorry.
My name is Sadie, and I played my violin and danced.
Okay. Anybody? Did I miss anybody now? No. Okay.
No.
With that... any chance you guys would be willing to perform one of the numbers, or maybe two of the numbers that you're going to do at the stage over the weekend? Would you guys be willing to do that for me?
Yes.
All right, let's go. Let's do that right now.
Well, I think we have to thank the Swiss Miss Royalty, all five of them, for serenading us with this concert here in the studio. We really enjoyed it. I also have to point out the fact that the girls really seemed to like each other. I couldn't help but notice that they were holding hands as they sang.
I know, isn't it cute?
It was fabulous.
That's a
okay,
great
Asia, thanks, guys. People will want to come hear them. And if they want to come hear them, let's talk a little bit more about the logistics of getting to and parking for Swiss Days.
Okay, so we do have shuttles, two shuttles from the north and the south into Midway. Parking is $15 a car, so just load up your car with all your friends and go and park and get the shuttle to and from the square. It drops you off right by all the shopping and food, so it's perfect. We do have everything on Town Square. We also have a lot of local businesses that surround Town Square that are local shops that are always fun to pop in. Good to see. Like I said, the event runs from 8 to 8 both days. There are no dogs allowed on the square. It's city ordinance. Gotta love those.
And there's not significant parking down in the core. I mean, if you don't park in one of these lots, you're going to have a problem, aren't
you? Yeah, there really is no parking. There is a lot of construction on Main Street right now in Midway, typical Utah. And so that's caused a lot of backup. But they have everything blocked off. I live about 5.5 blocks from the square, and it's blocked off all the way up to my road as well. So there's nowhere to park. So if you don't shuttle, just plan on hiking in then.
And again, for those who want to understand exactly where those two remote lots are, is there something on the website? Is there a map
or
something?
Yes, there is. There is a map with those. It's vaguely on Center Street, so down the south, entering from the south on Center Street down. It's probably going to be, I don't know, there's a church down there right by the bay. There's a big field parking lot down there. Okay. And then on the north end, it's where the Heber Valley Cheese is.
The creamery, is that?
Yeah, the creamery. It's right across the street in a field right there. So that's about, but yes, there is a map online.
And the online website, do you know the website address?
MidwaySwissDays. I think it's .org.
Okay. And for those who listen to this segment and really want to be able to catch the Swiss Miss Singers, I believe I know when they're playing. Is it Friday today at 2 and tomorrow at 3:15? Is that right?
Friday and Saturday.
Right.
So, yes, Friday.
Which is today.
Yes, 2. And then they also perform at 11:15 in the morning as well in the indoor stage, I believe. So they perform twice each day.
Okay. Well, I want to thank the Swiss Miss Girls for spending time with us this morning. And I want to thank Asia Mills, who is in charge of advertising PR for Swiss Days.
Thank you for having us.